Another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm so happy to be with all of you today. I have a great show planned. My guest today is Amani Ulugbala. She is the Assistant Program Director at Soulfire Farm, which is a great organic farm a few hours north of New York City. And they're doing some really great work there. And I'm excited to have her on to tell you about the work she's doing at the farm and some of her own artistic work. And so she'll be coming on in just a little bit. But first, I want to share with you some things going on in and around the news, share with you my weekly recipe and some ways that you can get involved in things. We're still in the new year, and I'm still hoping everybody is really psyched to stand up and resist the POTUS in the White House. And his agenda, which is really turning back the clock on the environment and on human rights. So we all need to really do our part. And coming up this weekend is the Women's March. And I know many of you are planning on going to that, but the Women's March will be taking place on Saturday and on Sunday in many parts of the country. There's a big conference going on for the Women's March on Sunday in Las Vegas, and that's like the main talking event, but the actual rallies, the majority of them are happening on Saturday. And you should go on the onto the internet, Google 2018 Women's March, and find out where a march is near you. There's a big one in New York City, of course, D.C., L.A., all the major major cities. I'm heading out of town for a memorial this weekend, and there happens to be one in Cincinnati where I'm going, so I'm hoping to be able to join there. So really, just wherever you are, Google it, and I'm sure there's some activity you can get to, but we really want to make this Women's March the biggest yet. And basically, it's just raising awareness. After last year, when we did this, it wasn't the whole issue with sexual harassment. Of course, the issue was there, but it wasn't in the news as much as it is now. And now it's really prevalent. People are coming out. I mean, I was listening to stories of all the Olympic, the young Olympic medalists that were abused during their training, and just horrendous. So we all need to do our part. So anyway, the Women's March is this weekend, but I actually wasn't even sure I was going to be able to go, because this weekend is also the NOFA New York Conference, and I'm doing a cooking demo there on Friday, tomorrow. So I hope I'll see some of you up there. But the NOFA New York Winter Conference is an opportunity for farmers and food purveyors and suppliers and consumers and everybody who cares about food to really come together and network and talk and learn. There's workshops all day long and talks and hands-on demonstrations and fun social activities, contra dance and music and films. So it's really a great place to be this weekend. So as always, there's more things than we can do. So just do something that's worthwhile, and we're all good. Other things coming up that you want to know about, from February 2nd to the 11th, there is a conference going on called the Real Truth About Health Conference. It's a 10-day conference taking place at the Hilton in Melville, Long Island. And it is a coming together of over 35 of the world's top authors, you know, and others as well, talking and lecturing about health, nutrition, food system, the medical system, and our environment. And it's a free conference, so you can register online and go to as many of the events that you want to participate in. There's also live streaming, so you can hear it from the comfort of your home, but there's some really great, great people that will be there, so worth going to. Also, February 14th through the 17th is the Organic Seed Alliance Conference. We talked about that last week when Michaela Coley was on, my guest from the Organic Seed Alliance. And this is a huge seed conference talking about seed saving, seed swapping, and preserving biodiversity in our food system. So that's a worthwhile event. It's in Oregon, so if you are there and can get there, that's great. The fourth annual Food Tank Summit in Washington, D.C. is coming up on February 28th. That's definitely a worthwhile event to go to. I've gone to all of them so far and always walk away with so much knowledge. I have lots more on my website, so do check that out. On my website every week, I gather as much information as I can from my community for events that are going on that are worthwhile that you should check out. So I really recommend doing that. Also, the River Fund Food Pantry, which is the food pantry that I partner with for Christmas and Thanksgiving to feed the homeless and those in need, they are still in need of coats. With this weather, there's so many people living out on the streets who don't have enough, who don't have money to buy a coat, and they are really trying to get coats to everybody in need. So they're having another huge coat drive. It's going to be taking place at 60 Soho, which is a restaurant down at 60 Thompson Street in Manhattan. And on January 18th from 7 to 10, they're asking people to bring down coats, and they will offer you a drink. You can have a drink on them. So please, if you have a coat to donate, please come down to 60 Soho. Also, I would be happy to collect the coats and bring them there myself. So if you do have coats, oh, that's actually tonight, isn't it? January 18th. So I am in touch with the River Fund always. So if you can't get there tonight, you can bring a coat by the IE Green Homestead, and I will get it to those in need. Also, I have lots of petitions I'd like to ask you to sign. There's a big push to try to oppose Pruitt's proposal to turn back the organic standards on organic livestock and poultry. Right now, if something says it's organic, it means that it's supposed to have access to the outdoors. A lot of times that's not actually the case, and he's trying to do away with that rule to start with. So please sign the petition that you can find on my website. It's also being put out there by Friends of the Earth, which is a wonderful organization you should all know about. That's another thing that's wonderful about the NOVA conference. You'll meet so many people from different nonprofits doing really great work, and you can find ways to get involved and push forward the things that are important to you and the values that you really cherish. There's also a petition to stop Monsanto from using the bee-killing pesticides that they are allowed to use that are killing our bees and our butterflies and our pollinators. So please think about that. And now I'd like to share with you my recipe. This week I made a vegan gluten-free carrot cake, and I have to tell you, it is the best one I've ever had. And I'm not just saying that because I made it, but it was so good. And you would not know that the frosting was not cream cheese frosting. And I made the frosting with tofu, and it was really, really exceptional. So this is a recipe you want to print up. It will be posted up on my website later today. So the best gluten-free vegan carrot cake. And if you don't want to use gluten-free flour, I'm sure you can sub out the flour and just regular white flour, and it still would be delicious. White flour, unbleached white flour, organic, and whole wheat flour. So this recipe, 3 cups of gluten-free flour. I use Pamela's bread flour. 1 cup of ground or gluten-free organic oats, and you just do that by grinding up the oats and turning it into a flour, and then you measure after you grind it, 1 cup. Then 1 cup of ground coconut, same thing. I buy organic shredded coconut, and I put it into the food processor, and I grind it up a little bit more. And what I find that does is it keeps the cake light and flaky. It adds a texture that sugar maybe would add to a recipe. So it keeps it from being too heavy. 4 teaspoons of cinnamon, 1 tablespoon baking soda, 1 tablespoon baking powder, 1.5 teaspoon salt, 1 cup raisins, 2 cups walnuts, 1/2 cup potato starch, a half a teaspoon of nutmeg, one cup of puffed millet or rice, and that's just a cereal that I have. You put that in also to help keep it light and airy. 4 cups of shredded carrots, 2 cups of applesauce, 1.5 cups of maple syrup or agave, 4 tablespoons flaxseed that I dissolve in 2 tablespoons warm water and 2 tablespoons of apple cider vinegar. And then I put in 6 teaspoons of vanilla, 1.5 cups of GMO-free canola oil, or safflower oil or sunflower oil would be fine. 1 can of organic crushed pineapple that you drain. And so you're going to mix the first 12 ingredients into a bowl, and then mix all the wet ingredients together except for the carrots. And then you add the wet and the dry together, combine them, mix them well, then mix in the carrots. And you're going to bake this at 350 for almost an hour. It's a very large cake. You can cut this in, if you just want an 8-inch sheet cake, 8-inch round cake, or even 9-inch, cut the recipe in half. This recipe made like a 14-inch double layer cake. So it's for a large cake. So if you need to, you can cut it in half. And I baked it because they were such thick layers. I baked it for almost like 50 minutes. But basically, you're just going to keep an eye on it. The back of my oven is hotter than the front, so I have to, set my timer 20 minutes in and turn my cake pan around so that the back doesn't burn. And then you know it's finished when it starts pulling away from the sides of the pan. And I also use a knife to test it. Put a knife right into the center, and it should come out clean. If it's still sticky, it needs to cook a little bit more. If the top is getting too brown, you can put some parchment paper on top to keep it from browning too much, or some aluminum foil or something like that. And then when it's cooled, you're going to remove it from the oven and let it cool a little bit on a rack, and then you're going to slice it horizontally in half to make each of the pans another layer. And for the frosting, you want 2 pounds of silken firm tofu, 2 cups of coconut oil, 2 tablespoons of vanilla, 2 cups of organic powdered sugar, and the zest of 2 lemons. And you're going to blend all those together in a blender. You can use a food processor, but sometimes the coconut oil doesn't blend up enough. It stays with little pellets of oil, and you don't want that. So you really want to get it smooth. And you're going to mix that up until it's really smooth. Then put it in the refrigerator a little bit, the icing, just to firm it up a little bit before you spread it onto the cooled cake. So let the cake completely cool before you frost it. And that's it. And then I grate some carrots on the side, and I put that on the side of the cake for my orange decoration. And it comes out really beautiful. So I recommend everybody making this cake. And when you do, please let me know how it is, because, as I said, I want to be getting feedback from people making my recipes. Okay, and now it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you my guest, Amani Olubala. She's the assistant program director at Soulfire Farm, which is about 3 hours north of New York City. And Soulfire Farm is like a model farm. They're really doing so much work to bring the community together, and they're demonstrating the power that working on the land can have. And they're committed to ending racism and injustice in the food system, and they use their farm to really help to do that. And they provide weekly doorstep deliveries in season of farm fresh, certified, naturally grown food to hundreds of individuals living in areas where they otherwise wouldn't have this really beautiful food. So they're doing really great work. And Amani is also an artist. She's a musician, storyteller, and she uses her art as a form to get her message out there, fighting injustice and equality or unequality in the in everyday life. So she's really doing some really great work. So it's my pleasure to introduce her to all of you. Amani, are you here?
I am here. Hello, Bhavani. Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
I'm really excited to learn more about your work.
Yeah, I just want to make sure, can you hear me well today?
I can hear you. I can hear you fine. Thank you.
Okay. I just spent a little bit of a time trying to find the perfect place. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. The show sounds excellent.
Great. Well, can you start, before we get into your own personal work, can you tell us what brought you to Soulfire Farm and how did you get into farming?
Absolutely. It's kind of hard not to tell that story without my personal one, but it was essentially when I was working at an all-boys high school in Albany, New York. There was someone who would become a very strong mentor in my life, Brother Yusef Burgess, who really stressed the importance of the outdoors, especially for young people in urban environments who don't have as much access to greenery. And so we got really into doing outdoor activities with the youth at the high school. And I eventually left that job and moved on to run a program called Youth Organics. So it was similar to what I was doing at Green Tech High, but it was just more in the summertime growing food with young people and exposing them to like the agricultural system beyond the grocery store. And so Soulfire was offering free programs to groups of young people or community groups and found them online. I lived in Albany at the time, so that's really close to Grafton where we're located. And so I was like, okay, great. Let's just find a bus. Brought the young people to the farm and was just blown away. It was like, it was just an oasis of good vibes and just beauty. And we got there. We were completely engaged in conversations about social justice while also being walked through inside moving spirit awakening space. Like they were making connections, Leah and Jonah, who were doing most of the youth programs at the time. That's mostly what I do now. But they skillfully brought us through like games and like discussing history and getting our hands in the dirt and then cooking. And I was just blown away. And I started to realize the connections between any work around racial justice, Black Lives Matter, and how crucial food justice was to that, because food was the number one killer of Black and brown people. And so I just got really jazzed from that one visit. And then next summer, I applied for their Black and Latinx Farmer Immersion Program, which just changed my life completely on so many different occasions. Different people said to me at different times, like, this is what it would feel like if our people were free. And it's just so true. And so that changed me. I was like, hey, how can I continue to be involved? I came back into the trainer next year, and then just kept looking for more opportunities, which eventually turned into my position opening up, which was just around youth and community programs. And now I'm the assistant director of programs, and it's great. That's how that happened.
Wow. Amazing. Can you tell us a little bit more about the founders of the farm? How did the farm get started?
Yeah, thank you so much for asking. They are so inspirational to me. So Leah and Jonah lived in Albany, New York, where I live, where I was running that youth program. And they recognized it as an area that some might know as a food desert. And so there was no access to any quality, healthy, fresh, organic, natural.
In Grafton, where the farm is?
No. They were in Albany.
Oh, in Albany, uh-huh.
Yeah, they were in Albany at the time, which is like maybe 40 minutes away from Grafton. And so they were in Albany, and they had food and farming experience. And were raising two very small children. They had two babies, and they couldn't find anywhere to feed their babies good food. They would say it would be easier to access weapons or drugs than it was to get your hands on a carrot or a tomato where they lived. And so, like, Leah was, like, walking up the hill, like pushing the babies for, like, miles to try to go to the farmer's market that only happened every so often during certain seasons. So it really wasn't working for them. They recognized that they had these skills and that they were being deprived quality food, and so were their neighbors. And they decided to, and they were encouraged by their friends and their neighbors. They all lived in sort of a collective kind of community to go buy some land nearby that was really cheap land in Grafton because the soil had really been degraded. And they were able to save money and get some land a little bit upstate. And they started growing a little bit of food, but they weren't looking to just kind of feed everybody and do a huge community piece. They were just kind of experimenting, looking to just do a couple things, take care of their family. But their neighbors were really like, no, we need you and we trust you. And so they took on like 20, they took on about 20 families to be a part of what would eventually become the CSA. And that was maybe about almost 10 years ago now. And that's how it started. They were hungry. Their friends were hungry. Their babies. And they had the skills and the ability to make it happen.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You know, believe it or not, years ago, I'd say going back 30 years. Yeah, about almost 30 years, maybe 28 years ago, I was living on Long Island. And I don't know that you'd call it a food desert, but to get organic food, which I felt passionate about, was almost impossible. I mean, that you could only get it at health food stores, and they didn't move the organic food fast enough. So by the time you got there, it always was wilted, and it was super expensive because they didn't get a lot of it. And so I started a food co-op out of my house, and that's how I kind of got started with a lot of this stuff. You know,
that's
I had done catering, so I had access to wholesale markets. But I started a food co-op the same way because, you know, to get good food, especially when you have young children, you know the importance of it. It's crucial. So
right, absolutely.
Yeah,
especially when you know that, you know, you have those skills and the access to it. Like Leah and Jonah felt like it was their responsibility in a sort, you know, because not everybody can necessarily go and like start a farm, start a co-op, all these different kinds of things that are so essential to our people's survival. But if we, those of us who do have those abilities, we have to use them. And I'm so grateful that there are people out here everywhere doing that work. That's a beautiful story.
Mm-hmm. Now you, in your own right, you're a storyteller, a musician, and you have found a way to actually weave your agricultural work into your music and to your art. Can you share with us how you managed to do that?
Sure. I feel I'm really technical about words sometimes. So it's like manage to. I feel like it manages me. And I guess I just say that to mean my art, just as I'm sure like most of us artists can attend to, my art just reflects my life. And so as I learn new things, as I get excited about new things, or, you know, really bogged down by certain things, it comes out either poetically or more lately musically, and without that like free form that I like to do with my poetry. And so it's been really wonderful working at Soulfire because I've been able to just incorporate all of that. So we do a lot of work with youth groups. A lot of youth, young people listen to hip hop music, and I really enjoy remaking popular music and changing the lyrics to reflect a lesson. And so, for example, we had a group of young people coming up doing some weeding of the kale, I think, earlier in the season. And there's a song by Kendrick Lamar that's really popular. It's like, I want to be with you. I mean, like, I just flipped it to, like, I want to weed with you. And then, like, interlaced just stories about like the African diaspora and like the power of our history being reflected in the roots. And as we're weeding out, sharing that music with the young people, them getting really into it. And like then us just talking about the science behind it all. And so it's really a number of ways that I've been able to bring it to the table. I was asked to write like a song for us, for an acceptance speech that we were doing for sustainability. And so that was really cool and creative. But I just kind of move where the art moves me and like to bring it if allowed. And if I'm not allowed to bring it, I don't really want to show up.
Yeah. I actually saw on the schedule you're going to be up at the NOFA conference too, aren't you?
I am. I know you're going to be there tomorrow.
Right.
So great.
Will you be there tomorrow?
Yeah. No, I'll be there Saturday because I'm going to be at Clark University tomorrow. But I'm going to be talking about ending racism in the food system and just talking about different ways that we can engage as individuals, organizations, or corporations, groups, wherever we fall in the spectrum towards ending all layers of oppression in the food system that we share.
Right, right. So, I've heard a lot of people talk about food injustice, but I've never heard it referred to as food apartheid. Can you share with us what you mean by that when you say food apartheid?
Sure. And so food desert is a term a lot of people understand and know that. But the reason why we don't use the term food desert is because deserts are naturally occurring phenomenon. That's what happens in nature. But what's happening right now in the food system is not natural. It's intentional. And so, like, it's based on a history of racism and all these different practices and policies that came out, be it through the USDA or, like, KKK policies and all these other kinds of pieces in our history that we're not often taught that led to the decline of Black land and farm ownership, as well as the fact that food-related illnesses are the number one killer of Black and brown people. And so the term food apartheid, we feel like more accurately captures what's happening because it just reflects the fact that certain people have access to food and certain people do not, or good food, or certain people have access to poisonous, toxic food, and others of us don't have to make those kind of choices. I'm happy to say more about any of that, but that's just like a broad overview. Karen Washington actually coined that term, and she is
food apartheid. Really, I haven't heard her say that, but because I've seen Karen a lot, but anyway, that was new to me, but I appreciate it a lot because it's true what you're saying. You know, food desert or desert happens naturally in nature, and apartheid does not. So when you also talk about food being the number one killer for Black and brown people, you're talking about food-related illnesses, correct?
Yes.
Can you share that a little bit with some of our listeners?
Sure. So communities of color have less access to life-giving, healthy food, and so that turns into higher rates of obesity and diabetes and so there's like so much of it. Like, but there's Leah put out a really great article that if folks want to get into the statistics behind things, it's on yesmagazine.org. It's like four not so easy ways to end racism in the food system. But it basically breaks down the percentage of people who are like overweight, obese, have diabetes or other chronic diseases, and it just every way it breaks down, Black folks are dying, and all these different ways of it. And also when we look at the people who are growing our food, I know this is not necessarily food related illnesses, but who are growing our food, they don't have the same basic protections that we expect folks to have under general United States labor laws. And so those folks also don't have access to medicine and different quality health care, rest, time off, other kinds of things we need to extend our lives. And so that's another piece of it. But basically, it's kind of what you would imagine with a whole bunch of communities of color all over the country being concentrated, like a high concentration of low quality food in neighborhoods, as well as the fact that good food, healthy food, food that's life-giving is so expensive or is really far away. If you don't have a car, if the bus doesn't run all the times or all the ways with your work schedule or whatever the case may be, you don't have access to food. And if, like, we see it here where I live, you go to one grocery store of the same chain in one neighborhood and one in another one, and it's completely different produce options. And so so many of these food, like these stores that are supposed to sell food in neighborhoods, people will say like, oh, but there's like bodegas, there's corner stores, there's these things. And like these stores that take EBT and food stamps, and like whatever other kind of government assistance, they're supposed to have about like seven different types and options, varieties of produce, of fruits and vegetables. And like you'll go into the store and you'll be fortunate to find two. And the quality of the produce options are deplorable and they're probably not organic. And so there's that. And then there's the fact that the daily food stamps allowance is about like, I think it's like $4 a day per person. I don't know what organic food or even just good food, like what whole meal you're going to get for a person for $4 a day. And so there's just all these different pieces.
And that's not one meal, that's three meals.
Yeah, exactly. Three meals.
Right?
What
that's
am I
three meals out of that $4.
With $4, precisely. And so it's just all these different pieces that lead to Black folks having the worst food-related illness outcomes and is deplorable. I don't know if I've said enough about it, but I'm happy to say more about anything. Sometimes I don't know which way to go because there's so many different pathways.
Right, right. So Far Farm is addressing some of these issues through education as well as just farming, right? Can you share with us some of the ways that So Far Farm does that?
Absolutely. We are training the next generation of like food justice activists, and we have this really amazing program that I mentioned a little earlier, Changed My Whole Life, the Black and Latinx Farmer Immersion. And really it does cover just like people of color in farming in general. And so we are trying to broaden in our stories and our narratives, including our indigenous family as well as our Asian family. But basically, this is a program intended to train folks in intro to farming. And that can mean you're bringing it back home to do a community garden. Maybe you're going to do a full-scale farm. Maybe you're just going to change the practices that you do in your house. Maybe you're going to grow some microgreens just on your windowsill. We don't know. But most of our alumni from the program go on to continue doing work or either in their personal lives, their communities, or in their careers around food justice, incorporating it in. And so basically it's a week-long kind of like a Black healing village, essentially. And you know, there's such a traumatic relationship with the land for so many people of color. So many people of color like see images of folks bent over in farms and fields and just get traumatic flashbacks or like genetic flashbacks to enslavement. And we want to change that story. We want to change that narrative. We want like folks of color to reclaim all of our collective right to belong to the land. And so BLFI, as we call it, Black and Latinx Farmer Immersion, is a space for that. It is a space for folks to explore maybe like trauma that they didn't even recognize existed within them as safely. It is a space for folks to understand where their food comes from, to understand what is happening across the world for folks of color and food growers and different ways that they can be active in this movement and also be active in their personal healing and reclamation. And so we do that in addition to doing public speaking all over, like teaching people about like history that we didn't know about, that we wish we knew about, like the depth of like folks of color and farming, and just so many different ways where nowadays we'll see different things pop up, like terms like, oh, permaculture, or like, I don't even know, the cooperative, but like all of these things have roots in like African and indigenous traditions and history. And so we educate about that. Leah right now is working on an amazing like manifesto of like just liberation. It's called Farming While Black. And it's basically just a hand guide to like everything from the different kinds of crops and people of color's connection and relationships over history with them to just different instances of history where folks invented new things or just anything ever since the recording of things that we can trace back folks of color and land. And so there's just all these different kinds of ways we're looking to, like, share knowledge and also take it in. And so we have on our website just a bunch of resources open for sharing with respect, of course, and recognition. And, we bring youth groups onto the farm to learn. I make a lot of visits to schools, and we're just looking for every way we can to get knowledge out and inspire people that there's a different kind of story that we can tell, that we have told around land and people of color, and we're going to do it, and we're going to get this freedom.
That's great. Imani, we're going to take a couple-minute break, and when we come back, I want to talk a little more about how you're getting the community involved in your farm.
Okay.
And how, you know, I just know that you do so much community work, and I'm really fascinated by that. So everyone, don't go anywhere. I'm talking with Imani Ulubala, and you're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. Be right back.
You're listening to PRN, number one for progressive minds.
Hi, everybody. It's Beatie Kondratos, host of the Ask Beatie Show. Thanks to Audio Now, the Progressive Radio Network now has an app. All you have to do is go to the App Store on your cell phone and search the Progressive Radio Network. You can listen live to PRN shows and also listen to past archive shows. So go to your App Store and download it right now.
Stay tuned for the best information on health and nutrition, current events, economics, the environment, and more on PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, this is John Lobel. You can hear my show Visionaries at 10 a.m. on Mondays on PRN. And guess what? PRN now has its own app. So you've always been able to listen to our shows by going to your web browser and putting in prn.fm, and then you can listen to the current show that's on air. But you can now download onto your smartphone, Android and iPhone, our PRN browser. Search for it in your app store, and you can listen live to whatever's on at the moment. So download now our PRN.fm app.
Progressive Radio Network. And I'm so happy to be here with all of you today. My guest is Imani Ulubala, and we're talking about Soulfire Farm, where she is the program director and works with the youth there. Imani, how are you?
How are you?
Good. So what is the mission of Soulfire Farm?
I really like the way it is written on our website. I hope that I can say it just like we do. But we're basically committed to ending racism and injustice in the food system. We raise life-giving food and act in solidarity with people who are marginalized by food apartheid. And we do this with deep respect and love for the land, for the earth, with respect and recognition of the wisdom of our ancestors. We're working to reclaim our collective rights to belong to the earth and to have agency in the food system, bringing diverse communities together and just sharing skills about sustainable agriculture, natural building, spiritual activism, health and environmental justice, and training the next generation of activist farmers, strengthening the movement for food sovereignty and community self-determination. That is our mission.
Uh-huh. And you said when the farm started, they started with like 20 families in a CSA. How many families do you serve now?
I think a little over 80. And so we've
branched out to include, so Albany, you mentioned New York City. Albany is the capital of New York State. And so we've branched out to the surrounding cities, that being Schenectady and Troy. And basically folks who are in areas that, like we said earlier, folks will recognize as a food desert. We would call it a food apartheid stricken neighborhood. And we do doorstep deliveries to folks who live in neighborhoods where you can't get any quality, healthy food, or depending on what folks' situations are, we have a different case-by-case relationship with different families. So some families might have different needs and need the groceries to be delivered right to their doorsteps. Others might have a car, a little bit of more mobility. And so we'll do a mass bulk drop-off, say. Sorry, I'm in a public space. It's kind of loud. But, yeah, a mass bulk drop-off space nearby their neighbors where they can pick up their groceries. About 80 families.
Do you also have some farmers markets in some of these food desert areas that you run?
We don't have any farmers markets that we run ourselves, but we do support local farmers markets. We don't. There's not really a whole bunch of them where we are, but there is one that's developing in the neighborhood where Leah and Jonah first started out. And so we are working with them. We're an advisor on their development. And we're working with them to provide some shares for them as well as shelling some produce. But the thing that we're really trying to reduce is waste. And so that's why we like to just market directly to the family, so we don't just have like, oh, a surplus this week where we're not sure what to do with the food. We want to make sure folks are getting exactly what it is that they want and that we know who we have a relationship with the people who we're growing food for.
And one thing that I saw on your website also is you accept SNAP payments, right? So you can take money that people have to use towards vegetables. You also participate in the I know SNAP has a couple programs like 2-for-1 type of things. Do you have any of those programs?
So Larissa, our farm manager, probably would be able to better answer that. I know that we do take SNAP at EBC. I know personally I had the Soul Fire CSA share before I came onto the team, and it was so helpful. And I feel like, yeah, when you're making a EBT purchase with the farm, it might just be in many places, but with the farm, you were able to get a little bit more for your amount spent. And so it was really, really helpful for me when I was using EBT and SNAP, but I don't know for sure about that 2-for-1.
Yeah, I know a lot of farmers markets have that program where it's, you know, I forget what they call it. Double up your bucks, I think it was called.
Yeah, I've seen that at the local farmer's market.
Yeah, so, you know, you get like, you know, for every $10 you spend, you get $5 extra's worth of produce or something like that. But
That would be great. I don't know. I haven't seen that. I need that. I've seen like $2 extra.
Well, look into it because I think the state offers that to farmers.
The state will
reimburse the farmers for that. So look into that program. I know different states have it, and I'm pretty sure New York has something like that.
Yeah. Now, the way it works for us is it's just generally sliding scale. So folks report whatever their income is, and they choose the amount that they can pay. And so they'll usually pay upfront at the beginning of the season, but for some folks, it'll go on a month-to-month basis. So,
yeah, that's what I was just going to ask, because One feedback I've heard a lot about CSAs in having access for those with lower incomes is it's hard for them to come up with the money up front. And that's usually what the farmers need, is they need the money up front to buy the seeds and to get their work going. And so that's always a struggle.
The sliding scale bit, I think, really helps for us a lot. We also offer something called a solidarity share, where folks will just support other folks getting the box of groceries every week. And so that usually goes to support folks who are facing issues with deportation under the current administration, or folks who are maybe dealing with issues of family mass incarceration, and people will just support their grocery situation. And so we don't have to turn anybody away right now, fortunately. And we're looking to expand for the next year. So if anybody in the area is listening, please visit our website. From firefarm.org.
And what are you doing as far as some of your community and youth programming at Soul Fire Farm, your particular work? How are you expanding that right now?
Mm-hmm. Right now in the off season, I'm mainly going to schools, having conversations with young people, helping plan garden projects for when the spring comes. And what I generally do during more of like the season when people are on farm is a little mix of a mini immersion day. And so that would mean coming onto the farm, immediately connecting with nature and our feelings, then doing a tour, having some time with our hands on the land, because we believe in giving to the earth before we feed ourselves. Then going inside together, making a meal, getting to know each other a little bit while we're doing that, having some play. Leah has this little little acrobat situation in the house because she's amazing. And so folks will engage on that, and then we'll sit down, have a meal together, and then move into more of a curriculum. And so we might be talking about anything from food justice, like the media's influence in teens' everyday life, or land loss and resistance, like the history of folks' responses to racism in the food system, or something connecting more with the earth. Maybe we'll go back outside and we'll do like a nature walk, or like capture beauty, or do some stone balancing and meditation. Or maybe they're looking to do more of like youth development around leadership development, but whatever it is that the group leaders have decided that they are looking for, I'll put together a day and we'll engage in those activities, and then we'll do some kind of closing. And like, hopefully what we love to do is get some action plans set and maintain contact. That's what we're working on now, is maintaining contact with young people so that we can stay engaged with these food justice energy that they've gotten when they come to the farm. And so do mostly things like that. We had our first youth Black and Latinx farmer immersion this summer, and that was an incredible like coming of age kind of experience for us and the young people. And we're doing a mix of things around youth development and education.
And love. What about cooking? Do you do any type of cooking training with them?
When we have young people come for the day, we do make a meal together. So, some people will have experience before with that. Some people will not. But usually we'll make like burritos, and we'll use produce from the farm, and or we'll make like pasta also using produce from the farm. And so we'll see how everything will go from the farm to the table. And when young people come for that longer youth immersion, there's these different blocks of cooking. So it's more like cooking classes than the adult immersion, where it's like we're just collectively cooking. But yeah, we'll do every single opportunity we get to have young people in the kitchen, we will take advantage of.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And do you, in your teaching with them, do you promote, I'm sure, a healthy eating diet, but what does that include? Is that more vegetarian? Is it more plant-based? Do you get into eating meat? And then if you do eat meat, do you talk to them about the different, you know, industrial meat versus sustainably grown meat or raised meat?
Yeah, we do all of that. We definitely, personally, most of us on the staff, I think, feel that a mostly plant-based diet with, I feel like, ethically raised and known raised meat, like, would be the personal best way to go, I feel like, for most of us. But some of us are vegetarian, and some of us are straight up, I just want meat and everything. But no, actually, I lied. I don't think anybody's like straight up, I just want meat and everything. But the point is to say that we try not to tell people what to eat, but we try to share knowledge about, hey, you know, including more plants in your diet could really be helpful with these different kinds of conditions and ailments. So if folks are coming into the CSA and they're like, hey, I'm dealing with these different things, we want to keep that in mind and have a conversation and possibly make recommendations and, you know, things like that. Just at least stay in contact and ask about how health outcomes are going with the Soulfire Farm Share more incorporated into the diet. But the things that we do with young people, yeah, we always try to encourage, like, if we're having young people do a media doesn't have my mind piece, we want them to make their own commercials about healthy eating and things like that, because we do talk about the impacts of eating the food that's in the stores or the fast food places and things like that. And so I think that's the thing. What also is helpful for us is we don't have much, we have mostly vegetables on the farm, but we do have some chickens that are, we have eggs that are laying, and we have chickens that we raise for meat. And that's important to us because we know that the people who are in our communities who are a part of our CSA do eat meat. And so we feel like if folks are going to be eating meat, we would like them to have access to quality meat that was raised in a loving way and that was transitioned in a way that was with consideration and ethics and all those kinds of things that are valuable to us, not to judge anybody else, but that's what's important to us. And like, we also know that, you know, we eat the stress that the animals who we eat are, you know, letting out before they die. And so in all these different kinds of ways, it's important for us, not just like because we care about animals and the earth and also the people. And so, yeah, we talk about all those kinds of things and offer folks
right.
different ways to engage with it. We have a newsletter that we put out with the recipe. I heard you give out your recipe. I really want to try that carrot cake vegan situation. But every single week we put out a recipe and just encourage folks to experiment.
Right. Do you process the chickens on the farm?
We do. And so we do that a part of the Black and Latinx Farmer Immersion. And so it's something that happens kind of towards the end of the program. And it's sandwiched in between like some like deep spiritual like cleansing work and things that we like to do. It's non-denominational, but it's just some energy things. But what we do is we will take the chickens from where they live and bring them to a space that we have kind of like enclosed, a little tent situation, and we bring in some different tools we borrow from farmer neighbors or we'll rent, like for feathers and other kinds of things. But yeah, we'll move the chickens right through in an assembly kind of situation, try to do it smooth and quickly and with consideration, as well as education for folks who most of the time don't know where their meat comes from. And most folks come out of it saying eating less meat or becoming vegetarian or vegan, because for a lot of folks, they're not getting their hands really in what they're eating. So it changes a lot of people. Changed me, yeah, for sure.
So funny, when you say, if you ask a little kid, do you eat chickens? They go, no, I don't eat chickens. I eat chicken, but I don't eat chickens.
You know, right.
Like chickens are animals, but chicken is a food. And so,
right.
you know, they eat chicken, but they don't eat chickens. And it's really
right.
you know, it's a very subtle thing, but they don't really think about it. I remember when I was a kid, you know, and our family, we ate tongue. And I said, you know, and when I realized it was a tongue of a cow, it was like, oh, my God. It never crossed my mind as a little kid that tongue was a tongue.
Right.
You know, so it's really interesting when, you know, once you start saying pass a leg and you realize that's not
right.
just a piece of chicken that's a leg. It's a leg.
Right.
You know? And, things take on different
exactly.
like that.
That's what happens with so much of the young people who come to the farm. They're like, oh my God, these are chickens. Wait, what? Y'all come with chickens? And we're like, wait, are you vegan? Like, no. Do you eat chicken? Yes. Okay, so what is the disconnect? And we get to have a really important conversation with some young people that some adults never have, you know? So it's important to have that access.
So before we run out of time, can you share with everybody your website, where they would, how they could sign up for your newsletter? And how they might find out some of the things that Soulfire Farm is doing.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
And also share your own personal artistic website, which I enjoyed going to so much.
Thank you so much. I would love to share both. So everyone, please visit us at soulfirefarm.org. And so that's soul, S-O-U-L, fire, F-I-R-E, farm.org. And on our website, you can check out programs for 2018, where we have our community farm days. And you can come up once, I think probably starting in April, once a month, we have a day where folks can come up, get their hands on the land in whatever capacity that they would be interested in. We have different activities depending what folks' mobility and interests are. And we follow that up with a potluck lunch and then a tour and a conversation, a small conversation about food justice. And so all are welcome. That's on our work day, our information, as well as the Black and Latinx Farmer Immersion application. All of that information is on our website. And my information, it can be found at Amani, A-M-A-N-I, .bandcamp, like I'm with the band and I'm going to summercamp.com. And you can find more contact information for me there, as well as music and poetry. Thank you so much.
Wonderful. So it's amani.bandcamp.com?
Yes, Amani. No, I lied. I'm so sorry. It's Amani Poets. Thank you for asking me again. Amani Poet. AmaniPoet.bandcamp.com.
Okay.
Okay.
AmaniPoet.bandcamp.com. Perfect.
Wait, okay, yeah, well, exactly.
Amani, thank you so much for joining us. It's been great. And everybody out there, thank you for joining us. You've been listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network.
Thank
you. Bye for now, and I'll see you all again next week. And you're so welcome, Amani. Thank you. Bye for now.